report. I apologize, there was a little confusion over who was going first there. The government's argument on guilt innocence is...
Are you Mr. Conrad?
Yes, I am, Your Honor. The government's argument on guilt innocence is that the victim's will was overborne through some sort of deception or coercion. They never identify a statement made by the defendant, by Mr. Garza Robles, that wasn't factually true. He said that he was afraid. If his purpose was to inveigle someone into traveling to Mexico, announcing that he himself was afraid would hardly do that. Furthermore, the victim wants to leave to go to Mexico before Garza Robles does. He says, come on, let's go, let's go, let's go. It's not till sometime later that Garza Robles finally gets up and says, okay, let's go.
Well, didn't he want to go because he was afraid of what would happen to his family if he didn't go?
Yes, he was afraid of going, and he was afraid of what would happen if he wouldn't go.
So if that be interpreted as somewhat of a threat?
Your Honor, if that makes his actions in going to Mexico involuntary, then this court has never seen a voluntary plea.
Then what?
This court has never seen a voluntary plea of guilty. Every person who pleads guilty is afraid what will happen if they don't plead guilty. They're afraid of what will happen if they do plead guilty. No, but they're afraid of the consequences either way.
Okay, but this isn't exactly like, well, I plead guilty because otherwise I'll get 30 years and now I'll get 20. This is, if I don't go to Mexico, my family will be killed.
My family might be killed. He didn't know what would happen if he didn't go, but he had fears.
Let me ask you.
He didn't go voluntarily. He went because he was afraid. He was under a threat, under an apprehension of fear that forced him to go.
Just as a person who pleads guilty is afraid of the 30 years.
Okay, but that's not a good analogy, so you don't need to say it again, okay? You said it twice. We don't like it, all right? If you could just stay focused on what your client...
Well, he certainly wasn't in any fear of Mr. Garza Robles. He said himself that he wasn't afraid of Garza Robles.
Because he was smaller.
He was smaller, he was younger. Garza Robles was a pawn.
All right, but was he afraid that if he didn't go to Mexico and explain how he lost his shipment, that something terrible would befall him or his family? He was trying to go work it out, right?
Not at the hands of Garza Robles, and Garza Robles did nothing to put that fear in him.
Okay, so why did he go?
He went because he was afraid of Lalo and what Lalo would do. But his fear of Lalo can't be transmitted onto Mr. Garza Robles.
Okay, but Mr. Garza Robles, whether he originally was a member of the conspiracy or not, clearly joined it once he went back across to Roma, Texas, and picked up the money. So he's responsible for what occurred. He's an aider and abettor and a conspirator as a result of that conduct, even if we accept this concept that he was also afraid at the beginning.
But if what he did was go there to pick up the money, that may be money for a hostage, but it's not money for a kidnapping that occurred in the United States. Unless there was the border crossing, there was no kidnapping in the United
States.
But
if we accept that Lalo directs both guys to come and Hernandez goes in fear of Lalo, and therefore there is a transportation, there is a crossing of the border, there is a coercion within the United States, and then Garza Robles joins the conspiracy by collecting the money and also aids and abets the conspiracy to kidnap aids and abets the kidnapping by going and getting the money, then there's sufficiency of the evidence. Is that fair?
The evidence is not sufficient unless Garza Robles knew of the impending kidnapping at the time they crossed the border.
Why can't he join the conspiracy later?
Because there wasn't a kidnapping under U.S. law unless the victim was kidnapped when he crossed the border. He may have joined the conspiracy to kidnap later, but he joined a conspiracy to kidnap under Mexican law, not under U.S.
But you said Lalo coerced him by fear while he was in the United States.
No, I said he was afraid of Lalo. That's a different thing. Lalo wasn't doing anything to coerce him. He was afraid of Lalo from the moment the drugs were lost. That fear existed in him regardless of anything my client or Lalo did.
And the fear was what made him force himself to go to Mexico to try to explain the situation, right?
Yes, and he went so voluntarily.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. I'm Robert Isaguirre here for Mr. Herrera. And I can see where the court, just by listening to what's happening, is saying or thinking. But Judge, we've got to remember that we can't delve into the mind of Lalo or, for example, the victim. The victim here was just as big a criminal, if not bigger, than our clients.
We appreciate that.
Okay. And you're reaching my client, Herrera, under the theory of conspiracy. He never came into the United States while there was a kidnapping. He didn't come into the United States. He never saw the victim until the victim was already in Mexico and the doors closed on him.
In fact, you argued in your brief that your client would have been more appropriate to indict him under the hostage
treaty. Exactly.
All right, well,
and I discussed that in my brief because
right.
when the court thinks of...
If we reverse this case.
Ma'am?
If we reverse this conviction.
Yes.
Is there any reason why he can't be indicted under the Hostage Taking Act tomorrow?
He shouldn't.
Certainly hasn't prescribed.
He shouldn't be, but I mean, you know, it would almost be double jeopardy. I mean, you're trying him again except you're trying him under a different theory. So, you know, how many shots are you going to have at him? That's not fair either, Judge. I mean,
well,
you know.
I'm not talking fairness. I'm talking practicality.
The court, I don't think the court.
Not one. So you think it's double jeopardy?
Ma'am?
You think it would be double jeopardy?
Yes.
Why?
Because you're really trying him almost for the same thing. I mean, except that in reality, Herrera really never did do anything for him to get two life sentences on this case. I mean, he was so far out of the picture, but yet he got in here. And the reason they did, Judge, we all have to be practical about it. Here the government argued, and that jury wasn't paying attention to the law that the judge gave them. They were just paying attention. How are we going to get equal with these people for what they did in Mexico? I mean, I could see how it would inflame a jury and where they would get to a point where they wouldn't want to.
My experience with juries is they take the judge's charge very, very seriously. I mean, to the point of almost ridiculousness sometimes that they're very, very careful with the court's charge. I mean, it seems to me if you're accepting that the court's charge is correct and y'all haven't challenged it.
Well, he certainly wasn't, the victim here certainly wasn't inveigled. No promises were made
to
him.
Well, was he coerced? I mean, you know, I guess I'm wondering in a way why we're even talking about inveiglement when you have a guy who's going for fear of his family's life.
Judge,
that's not deceptive, that's coercive.
No. Wait a minute, Judge. You're saying he's going for fear of his life. You don't know that.
Well, he said it.
In his mind, he had to make a decision. He had to decide. You know, if they would have told him, come over here and kill somebody, would he have done that? Would he have gone? We don't know. The courts are asking in this situation to believe that he went over there because of fear. No, he knew all of the facts going in. He weighed them, and he made the decision.
Well, you suggest
to
that
go.
He knew he wouldn't.
And it was a voluntary decision. He didn't have to go.
Yeah, but counsel, your suggestion in your brief is actually that he knew he would be held hostage, and that he therefore consented to it.
Had he taken $100,000 with him over there, he may not have been held hostage. You know, he might have thought he was going to talk him out of it, but he certainly knew what the rules were. So it was something voluntary that he did, not something that forced him or You know, if I was that afraid, I'd get my family and go somewhere else and hide. I wouldn't cross the river. So, I mean, we can't blind ourselves to what really happened here. And I think, judges, that you all are right now thinking on the lines of, well, he was threatened, and that's enough. And I don't think he was threatened. If he threatened, he threatened himself. He was the one that knew already. And if he did it that way, he did it for the wrong reasons.
All right, we'll save some time for rebuttal. Thank you, sir. Right, now, we'd like for the government to explain, or I would, what happens if you lose. Can you reindict these people? And why was the Judge Rubin's opinion in United States versus McInnes not controlling here? That's been on the books since 1979. Not everybody's agreed with it, but in fact, the district judge who denied the motions for acquittal relied on a Gonzales opinion, which I was the author of, and that opinion ignored McInnes. So there's some contradictory circuit precedent. Maybe wrong. I think it's wrong, but stuck with it.
Yes, Your Honor. You asked two questions. I'm going to address the first one first, and that is, it wouldn't be double jeopardy that we have a jury finding of guilty, a reversal. There's no jeopardy in that. We already had so we start from scratch. They could be reindicted on that case. Getting back to an earlier question from Judge Haynes.
They would be indicted on a different factual. It's also, right?
On the hostage-taking theory. If the court were to reverse in this case. In response to a question from Judge Haynes along those lines, it would the conspiracy could be joined after the crossing. That's similar to I believe it's the Banks case, where you had the crossing in interstate commerce for prostitution, and the allegation was, I didn't know that they were going to be kidnapped over here, but then they joined later, and I believe that is clearly a finding in that case. In response to your other question of McInnes, this case is not McInnes. And the reason is because in McInnes, you had a different standard of review. There you had a district judge on, I guess it would be stipulated facts, reversing dismissing an indictment. There was no trial. And when you see the discussion of voluntary in McInnes, the discussion of voluntary is in the abstract. There was no jury finding. There were no facts to put your arms around or to grasp a hold of as to determine what is voluntary in that case. Here, the court doesn't have that problem. The other distinguishing feature is that in McInnes, it was founded on the basis that you cannot transport yourself in interstate commerce, and by just even if you're decoyed, and there's some language in there saying that we're not going to extend the rationale of the kidnapping statute to that extent, but that we don't have that problem here. Here we have Lalo projecting his power and a manifestation of the kidnapping in the United States by the calls, by the, you know what, we need to go, the calls to Beto and saying,
look. But why did he say he went voluntarily?
He said,
what are we supposed to do with that evidence?
Your Honor, he said he went voluntarily several times. But when he used that word, he's not using it in the term of art the way it's understood and the way it was discussed in McInnes. It's a different use of the word voluntary. In fact, if you look at the record and the brief, he uses the term voluntary to discuss a function of his will in terms of, well, I made a decision to go based on these circumstances. And what he was discussing is what you all have addressed in your questions, that he had a classic carrot and a stick. The stick was the coercion. If this is what's going to happen if I don't go, and they're going to come kill my family. Beto already knew where his father lived, where his mother lived, although Hernandez doesn't recall that Garza Robles, I'm referring to Garza Robles as Beto here, had met his wife, but he also had met his wife as well, knew where Hernandez himself lived. So
here's my question. Why are we even talking about this inveigling stuff, which has to do with, well, I'll come and give you, you know, you've won a big prize coming over to Mexico to collect it, and then when you show up, then you get kidnapped. That would be a really different case. I don't see that here. I see this as a threat case. And why, so why even get into the whole McInnes quagmire if what we've got is a threat? We're going to take out your family if you don't show up here in Mexico.
The reason is because it's an alternative argument that was made to the jury. In fact, the jury asked the question, do we have to find all of these in their questions? The jury looked at this. They looked at this hard. They asked the two questions central to this case. They asked about foreign commerce, and they asked about do we have to find all inveiglement, decoy, kidnap, seize, confine. We have to find all of them, but the judge instructed them correctly that one will suffice. In this case, we went on two theories: the coercion theory, which was the stick if you don't go, and the inveiglement theory was, okay, I'm going to take my. I don't want to go. I wanted to jump out of the truck before I crossed.
Wanted to be arrested.
Yes, and he tried all the things. He wanted to be arrested out of the presence of Garza Robles. Demonstrating that Garza, he saw that Garza Robles was acting under Lalo's apparent orders to make sure that he got to Miguel Alemán.
If we accept the coercion theory, if we accept that he went, in a sense voluntarily, because in the sense that he wasn't tied up and gagged, but he went to protect his family, went because he thought his family would die otherwise. If we accept that, do we have to address the McInnes-McCrary line of cases?
No, we don't. I think one is enough. If you got coercion, a seizing by coercion, then you have the kidnapping.
And you think the jury verdict, the questions answered by the jury support coercion?
Yes, Your Honor, I do. And the reason is because all of the facts that were presented to the jury supported, again, the coercion theory, all of the threats. And I want to point Your Honors to something that wasn't clearly brought out in the briefs, although it was alluded to, and that is the recorded calls. And it's at the Government Exhibit 53, and I want to call Your Honor's attention to how the jury saw this evidence. There were three tapes that were played before the jury, and when they were played, they were used by the sanctions program. And so we had the transcript projected on the screen, and then you can hear the recorded calls in Spanish. So you can actually hear Lalo's voice most of the time talking to Hernandez. And in one of them, on the ninth, September 18th, on the 19th, and on the 20th, in all of them, he's trying to get Hernandez to come back. And in all of them, he is, again, going back to the inveiglement, this lulling over, come on over, everything's going to be fine. You're going to have to clear it up with my bosses. Tell them that you weren't kidnapped. Tell them that you weren't beaten. Tell him you were only there a week. All of these things that he's telling him. But there's at one point where Hernandez doesn't answer the phone because he's got to go to a debrief. And this was the day that the defendants get arrested. He's got to go to a debrief with the FBI to tell him about the kidnapping. And while he's there, he has his phone and he has his recorder. And they could hear Lalo calling and making threat after threat after threat. And one of them I want to call the court's attention to Government Exhibit 53, Lalo says, think of your family, and that's at page 9 and following, Government Exhibit 55, excuse me, think of your family. Your family is going to be the one that is going to cry, not mine. That's a direct threat. Page 12, Ramon, answer me, man. I don't want to go myself to look for you. I don't want to, I don't want to, I don't want to. But you're making me go, man. With the cars, they're going to locate where you live. He's talking about the company. And they're going to find out where he lives from his registration, and they're going to go get him. On page 14, you're going to avoid a problem. You're not going to have enemies. If you don't come, man, you're going to have enemies. Again, this is what the jury saw, and there were three of the recordings played for them, and they could hear not only see the transcript in English, but hear the inflection, the threat, the tone in Lalo's voice, at one time lulling, which is the inveiglement, what we have here, and in the other time threatening what's going to happen if he doesn't answer the phone, if he doesn't pick up. And so I call Your Honor's attention to that in terms of seeing it in this, in essence, both ways.
So that's your best evidence of threats?
That's my best evidence of threat, yes, Your Honor, because that's what it corroborates what Hernandez was saying all along about this man. Again, he says when he first met him, he was pointing a machine gun at his head, and it was Garza Robles that introduced them. This was his first introduction to meeting and working with this organization and this person in particular. So he knew what he was capable of, and going across into Mexico hoping that Lalo would be true to his word and not anything happened bad, but it turned out that that wasn't going to be the case.
Well, it seems to me, though, that Hernandez is consistent that he was afraid. I mean, his testimony is a little bit flaky, if we're being honest here, but the jury gets to make the credibility calls. But throughout it, he spoke of fear of his family while he was still in the United States being transported by Garza Robles. He didn't transport himself.
That's correct.
He was transported by Garza Robles, so that's another difference from McInnes.
Yes, Your Honor.
And at the point where he was still in the United States before he crossed, he was very consistent in his testimony that he feared for his family if he didn't go.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, let me ask you about the deception, getting back to that. It seems to me the evidence is pretty strong, and I want to know both legally and whether you think it's just a jury issue. It doesn't seem to me that there was any particular Judge Haynes' view, once you come over here and you win a prize. I don't think there's much evidence that he thought he was going over there and all was just a matter of an explanation. So whatever was said to him, it doesn't seem to me he was deceived, that he knew that there were serious consequences either way, damned if he does, damned if he does not, go across the border. Is that deception? I mean, it was never explained to him, if you come over here, you're going to be kidnapped. But it does seem to me that the evidence is almost overwhelming that he knew when he went over there he was going to be in a lot of trouble, a lot of fancy footwork. He's going to have to really work hard to survive the experience. So where is the deception? And I guess I'm asking, is that a legal question of whether that constitutes deception, or is it just a fact question for the jury of whether he was actually deceived?
The deception comes in with, yes, the impact on his mind was that I knew something bad was going to happen. But he says at one point in the record, he says, I knew something bad was going to happen, but never that I was going to be kidnapped. So the deception goes with, what Lalo's in effect words were, was that we're going to try, you come over here so we can talk face to face and identify the guys that ripped you off. So the deception in that sense was that it was going to be fine. The implication that it would be fine if you do come up, square up, and we'll talk it out, and then you work it out.
Well, so, the legal question I guess I'm asking, does the jury have to accept that he believed if he could just talk fast enough and well enough that all would be fine? Or is it only necessary that that have been said to him when it was untrue?
I believe it has to be, it was said to him and not true, and that he relied on it.
And you think there's enough evidence to show he relied that he would survive the experience? And in a way, as I see it, there was no deception here. He knew it was going to be bad if he didn't go, he knew it would be bad if he would go, and in fact, he survived the experience of going to Mexico. In a way, you could almost see this as no deception at all. But it took a lot of effort on his part and a lot of beatings to survive. So what is the evidence that he was actually deceived?
The evidence that was actually deceived was that he, when he got there, it wasn't to identify people, as Lalo said. It wasn't to go and try and figure out where these people lived so they can get the load back or anything else. It was, okay, you're going to have to pay it back. Okay, I kind of saw that coming. And you're not going to leave. And the date's closed. By prearrangement, by the way, the evidence shows that it was a prearranged signal, that this was his plan all along. And therein lied the deception. And you couldn't leave. And the only reason he was able to get out, not by his own wiles, it was by the intervention of the FBI. So I appreciate that Your Honor doesn't see the deception, but that's my answer to it. And that's what was, I believe, something that the jury saw and that they could find in the light most favorable to the verdict, that it was in this part of the theory that it was a inveiglement by deception.
Because the premise was that he was to come down there and help them find the thieves who stole the load, right?
Yes, Your Honor. And that's what was said to him while the phone was on speaker, while Garza Robles and him could hear it. What we didn't hear was what he told what Lalo told Garza Robles when the phone was off speaker, and all we know is that from the record is that there was a complete change in Garza Robles' attitude, in that he said, you know what, let's go. And from then on, his whole demeanor was, we've got to go, you got to go. Even when he stops to shower at his place, at his own place in Laredo, Hernandez is kind of hesitating, delaying, making calls, and Garza Robles says, no, you've got to go. So, and he states he had to go, and this goes back to Judge Haynes's questions, and that is that essentially it was the stick that was controlling in Hernandez's decision. That wasn't the case on September 20th when, unbeknownst to Hernandez and the FBI and everybody else, Lalo sends back his two trusted workers, who's Beto and Herrera, to come back and bring him back. And from the record, you could see that he didn't even know that they were coming back. But at that point, Hernandez was not deceived. He was not fooled, despite all of the recordings that you would hear on the record of him saying, it's all going to be okay. Tell him, look, if you go, you clear it up. Everything's going to be fine. But in that case, Hernandez was not deceived. So I ask Your Honor to contrast how Hernandez took the statements from one, and then that's how a jury could take it, from the second instance as opposed to the first instance.
Tell me about Herrera Cifuentes. I mean, Mr. Izaguirre says, my guy never did anything, and what is he doing here? So can you respond to that?
Yes, Your Honor. Mere presence at the scene of a conspiracy is not controlling, but it is a factor. So we can start with that. He was there at the house by his own admissions to the FBI. But there was also evidence that Hernandez said that he guarded him, particularly on the 15th of September when he guarded him in the Tahoe for 10 hours and tells him, you're a hostage, you don't have a choice, you're a hostage. And in that's the time that Hernandez pees in himself four times while he's sitting in that Tahoe, not able to get out while everybody else is partying and celebrating the holiday. He also mentions how Herrera is coming and going and involved in the ongoing conspiracy, the operation itself, which is in crossings with those Tahoes, and that's all on the record that's corroborated. And in fact, Herrera admits that he came into Miguel Alemán during those times and corroborates those crossings
to the U.S.
Yes,
so
Your Honor.
So that's how you tag him with United States jurisdiction.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor, and coming back into Miguel Alemán and getting involved in the wrapping and the sending out of these marijuana bundles that were coming and going in the property. So all of those things the jury had, and there's several times that he talks about that Herrera was there, for example, on the day that the gates closed. Herrera was there when responded to Lalo's orders, all of them, including Herrera, responded to Lalo's orders. Even though Herrera didn't have to do push-ups, he had some special treatment, he still responded to Lalo's orders, holding him when he was beaten, for example, on the day that he was taped and wrapped and the gun was shot by his head.
I mean, he did a lot in Mexico. I think the question really was whether there's enough for U.S. jurisdiction. You say these crossings
are
enough.
And of course, on the day, September 20th, when he came back, either he or Beto was going to, Garza Robles was going to drive him back into Mexico. So for all those reasons, we think that there was more than enough evidence for a reasonable jury to find that Herrera was active participant in the conspiracy and as an aider and abettor into the substantive count of kidnapping as well. There are no further questions, Your Honors. I'll rest on my brief.
Thank you. Mr. Conrad.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Hernandez was involved in a high-risk game, and he knew it. The fear of his family's life began as soon as he realized that the load had been stolen. There was nothing anyone had to do. He knew he was dealing with the Zetas. He knew that was a dangerous thing to do. Nobody had to do anything to coerce him once he knew he'd lost 650 pounds of the Zetas drugs.
But does it really matter when the coercion started? He was fearful, and then when he gets called and says, you need to come down here, that pre-existing fear resulting from the same defendant's actions, well, the initial defendant's, is continuing. I mean, he didn't need to start, it seems to me, does it, the fear, with the first step in the kidnapping?
Well, if the fear is pre-existing, then nobody did anything to coerce him. If he was already in fear and ready to go to Mexico, and we know that he was, because he was telling, on page 255 of the transcript, he was telling my client, let's go, let's go. And my client isn't ready to go.
That was after the phone call.
Yes.
I mean, he didn't just decide to go to Mexico to explain himself on his own. He was asked to come, and he thought that was a way, his fear of his family was greater than his fear for himself, and that was a way out of threats to his family, if he could just go. That's why he tried to get arrested, because if he could say, I didn't come because I got arrested, then he felt like he'd have it both ways. He wouldn't have to go to Mexico, and his family would be okay.
For my client to be guilty, my client had to know of an impending kidnapping before they crossed the border into Mexico. If my client did not know of an impending kidnapping before crossing the border into Mexico, then there was no kidnapping in the United States.
Well, can't the jury infer from the portion of the telephone conversation that was not on speaker that from your client's change in demeanor, we've got to go, hurry up, we've got to go?
The jury can speculate, but I don't think that's an inference. No, it's not an inference because there are many other equally plausible explanations. One is that my client was acting under duress. It's just as likely from these facts that my client was under a threat, one of you two is going to pay for this. But if we'd asked for a jury instruction on that, it should have been denied because there was not a scintilla of evidence to back it up. Just speculation as to what those phone calls were. We don't know what was said in those phone calls. And to say, oh, he was saying bring him down here for a kidnapping. We don't know. We don't know if he knew anything about a kidnapping.
Okay, so he could sell out, Garza Robles can sell out his friend to save his own skin. I mean, that's what this looks like. He figures, well, if I go and I help out with, he may not have originally wanted to kidnap the guy, but he's like, well, if I help Lalo get Hernandez, then I'll be okay. And that would still be a sufficient motive and a sufficient joining in the conspiracy.
Not if he's acting under duress.
Was he Lalo? Who was Lalo's brother?
Hector was.
Okay, but then if you look at his subsequent conduct, it's much more consistent with guilt than with innocence. I mean, he goes and he picks up the $57,000 or whatever it was in Roma. He participates in guarding over Hernandez in Mexico. I mean, his actions are not somebody of, as soon as he has an opportunity to be lawful, he does. He continues on with the conspiracy and continues on in furthering it.
Well, as a pawn in the whole scheme, which he was obviously expendable when he got arrested on the drug case in the U.S., Lalo laughed at it. So my guy is a pawn. He's an 18-year-old kid. He's not making up his own choices very much here. He's doing what Lalo tells him to.
A long time in our court. Where, in other words, pawn being, I understand your point of duress, I mean a gunpoint type of duress or coercion type of duress, versus he decides to do this. And if somebody decides to be part of a criminal enterprise, unfortunately, even if they're 18.
But if he comes back to Mexico, now he's free of duress, and he goes to the U.S. and picks up money, unless he was guilty of kidnapping at the time he crossed into Mexico, his actions afterwards, there was no kidnapping in the U.S. unless Garza Robles did it. So unless he was intentionally participating in a kidnapping at the time he crossed over into Mexico, he can't be guilty of the kidnapping.
Well, but
he might be guilty of other things.
I mean, your theory is that he's Lalo's agent, in essence, or Lalo's pawn, to bring Hernandez to him. Why isn't that a kidnapping of Hernandez?
Because if my client didn't know about the impending kidnapping, and there's no evidence that he did. That's just speculation. That goes beyond inference because there are so many other alternative explanations.
All right, thank you, sir. You got the time.
Thank you.
Judge, in a rebuttal to some of the things that the prosecution said, when he was telling the court that there were some tapes played, those tapes were, he's talking about tapes, Judge, that were played after Hernandez, the victim, had been released from Mexico to go back to the United States. The law is very clear that once the quote-unquote kidnapped victim is released, the kidnapping is over. It was finished.
I think he's just saying it's evidentiary of. He's not saying it is the kidnapping. He's saying it's evidentiary of how Layla talked to me before.
But he also even mentioned to the court that once they were there, or once the victim got to Mexico, he even said it on a number of times, well, then he was taken hostage. There's no question in my mind that the hostage taken act probably would have fit this crime a whole lot better. There is no question, particularly to Herrera, more particularly to Herrera, because Herrera never comes back into the United States until the, so to speak, kidnapping was over with. He had been released. He had come back. He was working now with the FBI. There are so many things here, Judge, that I think what I would like the court to really think about is we can't suspicion a lot of these. We can't put in the minds of what was going through the victim. The court keeps talking about, well, the fear of his family. If the fear were that great, if he really thought that his family was going to be hurt, then what would any one of us do? We would go protect our families. He didn't do that.
Well, maybe he thought
So we can't.
Maybe he thought he was protecting his family by serving himself up as a sacrificial.
Well, man. He could have thought that. But then when you get to that, you know, he's making a decision. He's making a voluntary decision to decide what he's going to do. That, I think, inveiglement.
I mean, if you ask me whether it's my life or my husband's, I'm not sure that's really a voluntary decision if I say, okay, take mine.
Inveiglement means deceit, Judge. Where did Lalo deceive the client prior to him crossing the river?
Well, wasn't there you come down here and talk about it and we'll try to, you help us find this load?
Yeah.
That's deception, that all they wanted him down there for was to keep him till somebody brought the cash.
Not necessarily, Judge.
No.
What if he would have brought the cash right then and there? You see, we are...
Well, I bet he would have
given we are by the nature of what we're doing.
I bet he would, if he had the cash...
We are assuming.
Counsel, let me ask you a somewhat different way when you don't have much time left. If we find that there was a kidnapping committed by Garza Robles, is there anything independent for your client that would cause us to reverse his conviction?
Yes. Where was my client ever in the picture, Judge?
Well, he was helping him in Mexico. I mean, he can join the conspiracy after the conspiracy starts, can't he?
Well, you're having to stretch it. You're really having to stretch a person who is in Mexico, who is probably over there wrapping dope and getting ready to be shipped to the United States, okay, but has really nothing to do, doesn't even know that somebody is, quote unquote, inveigling the victim to come down here.
But he does know he's being confined. He is assisting in the confining of this person who, in my question, let's assume, we have found has been kidnapped. So he is helping, after the kidnapping has been accomplished, confine him. Is he not?
No. No, because the kidnapping, and what we're saying, never occurred. It was a hostage taking. It just never occurred, Judge. I'm really thinking that we're having to presume or assume what the client was thinking, what the victim was thinking. We can't do that.
All right,
there was an equal.
Mr. Conrad, your court appointed. Thank you very much for your service.
Thank you. And I'd like to thank the court for staying in the morning.
A good decision.